most of what I've been looking at is going to be sutta reading, because there's a lot of really good ones, particularly in the Khanda Samyutta and in the connected discourses, the Samyutta Nikaya. But I thought first I'd just do a little, maybe a little bit of backtrack, just with a few excerpts from Anālaya Satipatthana, just because I think he has some nice ways of summarizing and phrasing some of the aspects of this teaching. And then we'll launch into some more suttas. The first thing, as I was going through this and looking to see what might be here, I came across a footnote regarding a question that had come up last week in one of the readings about whether the five aggregates, the theme of the five aggregates, was known or was a paradigm that was understood before the time of the Buddha. Was it known throughout India at that time among the various seekers and sages? His footnote, there's a footnote that addresses that actually, and I'll read it, but you know, his basic speculation is that it seems likely that it was, but it's not, it's more based on inference rather than actual fact, but so it's still kind of unsettled, but I'll read what he says here. The expression five aggregates seems to have been easily intelligible in ancient India, since it occurs in the Buddha's first discourse, apparently without any need for elaboration or explanation. Similarly, in the Majjhima Nikaya, the Satchika discourse, the lesser discourse to Satchika, the five aggregates form part of a description of the Buddha's teaching to the disputer Satchika, who was presumably unfamiliar with Buddhism, but appears to have readily understood what was being said. This suggests that the five aggregate scheme might have already been in existence at the time of Gautama Buddha. like I said, more by inference. He also mentions here that Shtrbatsky mentions parallels to the aggregates in the Brahmanas and Upanishads, and according to Warder, the aggregates were a known concept among the Jains and possibly among the Ajivikas. He also mentions here that since the discourses also include contemplation of the five aggregates in their description of the awakening of the ancient Buddha Vipassi, it seems that from their perspective, too, the scheme of the five aggregates was known before the advent of Gautama Buddha. But that particular one seems to be a bit far-fetched to me, because the Buddha Vipassi was a long time ago.
Well, it also tends to be, once you start getting into that, it tends to be more mythological.
Yeah.
And then that's written post-dating.
Right. But anyway, you know, by inference, one might suppose that there was at least some familiarity with them as a paradigm. I thought that was a bit of an interesting point. Okay, so just a few passages that kind of comment on some of the readings that we've already heard, and then a little bit of analysis around some of the five aggregates I thought was useful here. The sequence of the five aggregates leads from the gross physical body to increasingly subtle mental aspects. The first of the aggregates, material form, rupa, is usually defined in the discourses in terms of the four elementary qualities of matter. A discourse in the Khanda Samyutta explains that material form, rupa, refers to whatever is affected, rupatti, by external conditions such as cold and heat, hunger and thirst, mosquitoes and snakes, emphasizing the subjective experience of rupa as a central aspect of this aggregate. Next in the sequence of the aggregates come feeling, vedana, and cognition, sanya. That's the word he uses for sanya, is cognition, which represent the affective and the cognitive aspects of experience. In the context of the process of perception, cognition, sanya, is closely related to the arising of feeling, both depending on stimulation through the six senses by way of contact. The standard presentations in the discourses relate feeling to the sense organ, but cognition to the respective sense object. This indicates that feelings are predominantly related to the subjective repercussions of an experience, so that's why he refers to it as affective, while cognitions are more concerned with the features of the respective external object. That is, feelings provide the how and cognitions the what of experience. To speak of cognition of an object refers to the act of identifying raw sensory data with the help of concepts or labels, such as when one sees a colored object and recognizes it as yellow, red, or white, etc. Cognition to some extent involves the faculty of memory, which furnishes the conceptual labels used for recognition. The fourth aggregate comprises volitions, sankhara, representing the conative aspect of the mind, which is like volitional or purposive. These volitions or intentions correspond to the reactive or purposive aspect of the mind, that which reacts to things or their potential. The aggregate of volitions and intentions interacts with each of the aggregates and has a conditioning effect upon them. The fifth aggregate is consciousness, vijnana. Although at times the discourses use consciousness to represent mind in general, in the context of the aggregate classification, it refers to being conscious of something. This act of being conscious is most prominently responsible for providing a sense of subjective cohesiveness, for the notion of a substantial I behind experience. Consciousness depends on the various features of experience supplied by name and form, nama rupa, just as name and form in turn depend on consciousness as their point of reference. Owing to the influence of ignorance, these five aggregates are experienced as embodiments of the notion I am. I think this is a useful kind of analysis here. From the unawakened point of view, the material body, form, is where I am. Feelings are how I am. Cognitions are what I am. Volitions are why I am acting. And consciousness is whereby I am experiencing. In this way, each aggregate offers its own contribution to enacting the reassuring illusion that, quote, I am. By laying these bare facets of the notion I am, this analysis of subjective personality into aggregates singles out the component parts of the misleading assumption that an independent and unchanging agent inheres in human existence, thereby making possible the rising of insight into the ultimately selfless anatta nature of all aspects of experience. So I really appreciate that, because he's kind of parsing out the fact that the analysis of the five aggregates as individual components that each have a contributing presence to that overall illusion of I am can be broken down, looking at each one of them individually, separately, kind of dissecting it and pulling it apart to kind of tease out that that notion of a solid entity, kind of picking it apart like that simile of the parts of a chariot, looking at the parts rather than the whole thing as one piece. So that's just a few readings from Anālaya. Any comments on that?
Then I often use our translation of forms, body, and the chanting that we do. But I haven't really used elements as contact bases. I'm just wondering if you have any experience with that, more differentiation of kind of exploring the elements with contact than arising or giving rise to feeling. rather than just like the body. The body is just a thing.
You mean using the elements like earth, water, fire, air, those individual elements? Okay. Turn it up to Limpa for a question. No? So, deferring to you if you have some input. Okay. Nice try, right? A little bit for me. You know, I haven't made contemplation of the elements a huge, you know, part of my practice. But sometimes, particularly with the form, the earth element, and to some extent the liquid element, because those are the real most noticeable components, particularly like in the contemplation of the 32 parts, which is something that I've spent more time with. But in some ways, I have the times that I have done it, have found it a very useful contemplation, because it moves into something that's you know, less identifiable or less recognizable in the way that I usually relate to the body. You know, I have a lot of, you know, practice relating to different organs and different things, and things still sometimes fall into the illusion of somehow they're being part of self or being, you know, part of who I am, even by dissecting it like that. But when you get into just clumping all of those, say, you know, the first half of the 32 parts into, you know, this is just earth element, that somehow kind of takes away the edge of, you know, personalness or the edge of identification, and just clumps it more, for at least in my experience, into a, you know, it's just earth element. That's all it is. You know, just like the floor, the cushion, the ground outside, and the same with liquids. So that's the advantage, I think, of doing that kind of contemplation. It is, for me anyway, it has the potential of depersonalizing it even more than picking apart piece by piece.
It's striking in the little classic dictionary, the Buddhist terms, Pali terms, when you look at the katas, rupa, it breaks it down into the four elements, the dhatus. That was interesting, isn't it? It really does that.
That's the way that's what Yamas defines it, is it? Okay. If there's no more comments on that, then I'll return to some of the suttas. I was blessed with Ajahn Pasano's organization, and so he actually had a few more that he was thinking of reading and didn't have time for, so I inherited those for the first day or two here. So the next one on the list here is from the Khanda Samyutta. It's number 5. Oh, right here on the tag. Okay, got it. This is number 5 in the Khanda Samyutta, titled Concentration. Thus have I heard. At Sawati, there the Blessed One said this: Bhikkhus, develop concentration. A bhikkhu who is concentrated understands things as they really are. And what does he understand as it really is? The origin and passing away of form, the origin and passing away of feeling, the origin and passing away of perception, the origin and passing away of volitional formations, the origin and passing away of consciousness. And what, bhikkhus, is the origin of form? What is the origin of feeling? What is the origin of perception? What is the origin of volitional formations? What is the origin of consciousness? Here, bhikkhus, one seeks delight, one welcomes, one remains holding. And what is it that one seeks delight in? What does one welcome? To what does one remain holding? One seeks delight in form, welcomes it, and remains holding to it. As a consequence of this, delight arises. Delight in form is clinging. With one's clinging as condition, existence comes to be. With existence as condition, birth. With birth as condition, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair come to be. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. One seeks delight in feeling, in perception, in volitional formations, in consciousness, welcomes it, and remains holding to it. As a consequence of this, delight arises. And then on through the same sequence of dependent origination. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. This, bhikkhus, is the origin of form. This is the origin of feeling. This is the origin of perception. This is the origin of volitional formations. This is the origin of consciousness. And what, bhikkhus, is the passing away of form? What is the passing away of feeling? What is the passing away of perception? What is the passing away of volitional formations? What is the passing away of consciousness? Here, bhikkhus, one does not seek delight. One does not welcome. One does not remain holding. And what is it that one does not seek delight in? What doesn't one welcome? To what doesn't one remain holding? One does not seek delight in form, does not welcome it, does not remain holding to it. As a consequence of this, delight in form ceases. With the cessation of delight comes cessation of clinging. With cessation of clinging, cessation of existence. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. One does not seek delight in feeling, in perception, in volitional formations, in consciousness, does not welcome it, does not remain holding to it. As a consequence of this, delight in consciousness ceases. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. This, bhikkhus, is the passing away of form. This is the passing away of feeling. This is the passing away of perception. This is the passing away of volitional formations. This is the passing away of consciousness. So I think the first thing that is worth pointing out is just right at the very beginning. The Buddha talks, you know, about developing concentration. That throws that aspect into it, that it's for one understanding these points is for one who does have a concentrated mind. For really seeing it, you need to have the quiet of samadhi, a peaceful mind that can recognize this process of how seeking delight in any one of the five aggregates is what leads to the clinging, and then going through this formulation of, or partial formulation anyway, of the dependent origination, and that being free from the delight or the craving in any of these khandhas leads to the ending of suffering. Just a real quick re-emphasis of that is in another sutta, number 29, which I think puts it all very succinctly. It's entitled Delight. At Sawati, bhikkhus, one who seeks delight in form seeks delight in suffering. One who seeks delight in suffering, I say, is not freed from suffering. One who seeks delight in feeling, in perception, in volitional formations, in consciousness, seeks delight in suffering. One who seeks delight in suffering, I say, is not freed from suffering. One who does not seek delight in form, etc., in consciousness, does not seek delight in suffering. One who does not seek delight in suffering, I say, is freed from suffering. Comments on those?
Especially, I really appreciate reading Navio's comments before that, because I think, you know, in the commentarial tradition, it's often trying to use the five aggregates as a way of explaining what exists. Whereas what Navio is saying is the five aggregates are a tool for getting through the suffering.
Right, and that looking at them as an experience rather than as a category of existence is really key when you're going through and listening and trying to apply it to real life experience. Yeah, I agree. Okay, time for a few short ones, I think. There are, taking a little bit of a diversion from the Khanda Samyutta, back to the Bhikkhuni Samyutta, Bhikkhuni Samyutta, a few encounters between several Bhikkhunis and Mara. And the first one is the very first one in that Samyutta. And it's entitled The Name of the Bhikkhuni, Alawika. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Sawati in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. Then in the morning, the Bhikkhuni, Alawika, dressed and taking bowl and robe, entered Sawati for alms. When she had walked for alms in Sawati and had returned from her alms round, after her meal she went to the blind men's grove, seeking seclusion. Then Mara, the evil one, desiring to arouse fear, trepidation, and terror in the Bhikkhuni Alawika, desiring to make her fall away from seclusion, approached her and addressed her in verse. There is no escape in the world, so what will you do with seclusion? Enjoy the delights of sensual pleasure. Don't be remorseful later. Then it occurred to the Bhikkhuni Alawika, now who is it that recited that verse? A human being or a non-human being? Then it occurred to her, this is Mara, the evil one, who has recited the verse desiring to arouse fear, trepidation, and terror in me, desiring to make me fall away from seclusion. Then the Bhikkhuni Alawika, having understood, this is Mara, the evil one, replied to him in verses, there is an escape in the world, which I have closely touched with wisdom. O evil one, kinsman of the negligent, you do not know that state. Sensual pleasures are like swords and stakes, the aggregates like their chopping block. What you call sensual delight has become for me non-delight. Then Mara, the evil one, realizing the Bhikkhuni Alawika knows me, sad and disappointed, disappeared right there. So I kind of like that image of the aggregates are like the chopping block. Sensual pleasures are like swords and stakes. And what we, what they drive themselves into, are the aggregates.
And she says, "What there is an escape from the world, and I have touched closely."
There is an escape in the world which I have closely touched with wisdom, which he has not. Okay. And the next one, this is number 9, Sela. At Sawati, then in the morning, the Bhikkhuni Sela dressed. She sat down at the foot of a tree for the day's abiding. Then Mara, the evil one, desiring to arouse fear, trepidation, and terror in the Bhikkhuni Sela, desiring to make her fall away from concentration, approached her and addressed her in verse. By whom has this puppet been created? Where is the maker of the puppet? Where has the puppet arisen? Where does the puppet cease? Then it occurred to the Bhikkhuni Sela, now who is this? This is Mara, the evil one, desiring to make me fall away from concentration. Then the Bhikkhuni Sela, having understood, this is Mara, the evil one, replied to him in verses. This puppet is not made by itself, nor is this misery made by another. It has come to be dependent on a cause. With the cause's breakup, it will cease. As when a seed is sown in a field, it grows depending on a pair of factors. It requires both the soil's nutrients and a steady supply of moisture. Just so the aggregates and elements and these 6 bases of sensory contact have come to be dependent on a cause. With the cause's breakup, they will cease. Then Mara, the evil one, realizing the Bhikkhuni Sela knows me, sad and disappointed, disappeared right there. So that's another nice verse, and it has a reference to the seed that's sown in a field depending on factors, nutrients, and a steady supply of moisture. And I'll read the footnote on that because it also refers to some other teachings along the same lines. 359. One key to the interpretation of Sela's reply is in Anguttara's, where it is said that kama is the field, consciousness the seed, and craving the moisture for the production of future renewed existence. The cause, hetu, then, is the comically formative consciousness accompanied by ignorance and craving. When that dissolves through the elimination of ignorance and craving, there is no production of aggregates, elements, and sense bases in a future life. The imagery of seeds and vegetation recurs in another Samyutta Sutta, which also helps to illuminate these verses. Comments? Questions?
Is it, Ajahn, is that footnote
hold on a second. Yeah, it is. It's Bhikkhu Bodhi's. He also, in a previous footnote, I think it was probably pretty clear to everybody, but mentions that the word puppet refers to individual existence. The sense of individual existence via the five khandhas. Okay, there's another couple, but we'll save them maybe for tomorrow since it's a few minutes past 7:00.